here, the time is 5:12, and we are pleased to have here in attendance Representative Crawford, Newman, Ramirez, Coghill, and myself, Chair Dahlstrom. Representative Curtula is not going to be with us this evening, and we anticipate Representative Lynn joining us shortly. The first bill that we would like to take up this evening is the CS for House Bill, excuse me, for number Senate Bill 52, version F. If you all have that. And I'd like to ask Rick Urien if you'd please join us and give us your testimony on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Rick Urien. I'm the Director of the Division of Occupational Licensing. And I am sorry that I don't have my purple suit with the wide lapels and pork chop sideburns and curly hair or whatever I look like in those days. I'm here today to testify in favor of the bill before you. Many times during your legislative careers, you'll hear people come before you and say the bill before you is merely a housekeeping measure. Lots of times that isn't totally true. But I can assure you that the bill before you is strictly a housekeeping measure. It makes no substantive changes in the law. It merely, September of last year, Governor Murkowski issued Administrative Order Number 219, which moved the corporations, which from banking corporations to occupational licensing. Frankly, this is the way it should have been organized a long time ago, because we have so many things in common between issuing business license and corporations. And we've had so many, many problems associated with the fact that those two divisions, those two operations weren't in one unit. And the bill before you simply removes all statutory references to the Division of Occupational Licensing or the Division of Banking and Securities, or where it just says the division, and inserts a generic department, which is Department of Commerce, but in that. And it will allow us, the eventual result of passage of this bill, will allow us to rename the division, which I handle, and name it to something that will totally reflect what we really do. It'll be Division of Corporations and Business and Professional License, or something. We haven't decided what the name will be, but that's all the bill before you does, and we'd ask that you approve this. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from members of the committee? For the record, Representative Lynn has joined us. We're happy to have you here with us.
Thank you.
Sounds to me like this is truly one of those pure cleanup housekeeping bills. I have reviewed the bill, and I do not have questions. Is there anyone in line or anyone in the audience who wishes to ask questions? Is there anyone online or in the audience who wishes to testify? All right. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
And with that, I'm going to close public testimony. And do any of the members of the committee wish to address anything amongst us? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I looked through this bill, and I tried to figure out if there was something in here that I didn't see. I haven't seen it yet. So I believe that the man's telling us the truth.
Thank you. I agree with you. Representative Coghill.
Madam Chair, I also read through it, and so I would move that we pass CS for Senate Bill 52, Labor and Commerce, out of committee with individual recommendations.
And attach to a fiscal note?
And attach to a fiscal note.
Great. Are there any objections? Seeing none, this bill is passed. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Urien. For the next piece of business, we have House Bill 164, and those of you that were in the session this morning on the floor heard the speaker's comments about House Bill 164. It will be waived officially in session tomorrow and go straight to finance. We have all the signatures of the members that are here, and that will be done tomorrow. So that leads us to House Bill 163. And I'd like to invite the sponsor to come forward, state your name and your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Representative Mike Kelly, and I'm here to introduce and speak to House Bill 163. Madam Chair, I think this is a significant day for me. I am now less comfortable on this side of the table than I am on that side.
I like it.
Is this where we all give you a dirty look?
Yeah, no, yeah, go ahead. Madam Chair, this is an act directing the sale of certain power projects acquired or constructed by the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority and the Alaska Energy Authority by the State of Alaska to a joint action agency composed of three or more electric utilities. The recent Rail Belt Energy Study reported that over $5 billion of investment and O&M expenses would be required over the next 25 years to ensure adequate, stable power production for the Rail Belt. House Bill 163 is an important step in providing a mechanism for Rail Belt electric utilities to efficiently assume ownership and to continue to operate existing shared facilities, and it provides a mechanism for better coordinating, planning, and operation of those future resources. The Rail Belt area, the Rail Belt area has six utilities that are interconnected and utilize the state-owned Alaska Intertie and Bradley Lake hydroelectric projects. During the 1980s and 90s, the Alaska Energy Authority took the lead on planning and developing a number of generation and transmission projects. The Alaska Energy Authority and the governor have now made clear that the era of state-planned and financed energy projects is over and that the state wants to turn over that role to a single entity acting on behalf of the Rail Belt utilities. In 2001, the Alaska Legislature authorized the formation of joint action agencies as the vehicle for multi-utility purchase of state-owned power projects and the development of additional resources. The Four Dam Pool Power Agency was formed under these statutes in 2002, and it purchased and now operates four previously state-owned hydroelectric projects. Among other things, the statute provides that public utilities that purchase power from a power project owned by the authority may form a joint action agency and purchase the power project from the authority. A joint action agency is an important tool for meeting the growing needs of Alaska's citizens for reliable, low-cost power. The joint action agency will be a separate legal entity governed by its own board of directors and bound by its own joint action agency agreement and bylaws. A joint action agency will allow utilities to come together to work more effectively and to attract the lowest cost financing available, a key component of the overall cost of infrastructure improvement. Membership in the Rail Belt Joint Action Agency would be available to all of the interconnected Rail Belt utilities and associate memberships to non-Rail Belt utilities. Purchases of power and operation and maintenance of facilities and other activities related to the Intertie and the Bradley Lake Project are currently governed by various agreements to which the Rail Belt utilities and the state are parties. The rights of the utilities under those agreements would be unaffected by transfer of ownership. House Bill 163 would direct the Energy Authority as owner of Bradley Lake and the Intertie, and ADA as the owner of the Healy Clean Coal Project, to negotiate the transfer of those projects to the Rail Belt Joint Action Agency. Both Bradley Lake and the Intertie were constructed for the purpose of benefiting Rail Belt residents. In order to avoid any increased cost to residents of this transfer, terms of the transfer call for the Joint Action Agency to assume the existing debt on Bradley Lake, and to take ownership of the Intertie in exchange for the commitment to make necessary repairs to that facility. Because HCCP is not currently operating, it's been shut down since early 2000, nor is it under contract to any utility, the Joint Action Agency would commit to assume ownership and work to make the plant operational, and any compensation to ADA for transfer would be determined and funded by the legislature. Transfer of these projects to the Joint Action Agency will result in increased utility coordination, will facilitate necessary investments in the Intertie and HCCP, and will relieve the state of obligations and risks associated with each project. Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. I know it's been hard to schedule this because we've been walked on by a caucus meeting and a couple of other things. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony, and I know that we have folks both here and online. And you know these utility guys, I've had them check for weapons. Everything's clear, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. This is a great group, and I'm happy to have you all here today.
Hey.
Questions from Representative Newman?
Sure.
little anxious here. Thank you, Mr. Madam Chair. Representative Kelly, you'd stated that this organization would take ownership of the Healy Clean Coal Project. Did I understand that right, that you want to take ownership of it, but yet you still want the state to invest the money to upgrade it so that it's in, so that it's in working condition?
Good question. No, the utilities would be responsible for any action required to get that plant operating. What the bill states is that if there were any charge for the project, to buy the project, then that would be determined by the legislature. It's the utilities' hope, to be frank, that this project, which has been sitting for 5 years, it's in its, 5 years now, that the utilities could take that and, by spending the money to make it commercially operable, they could save money for the state, which is now paying to have it mothballed and paying off the debt on it. They could actually take over the plant, and they would actually, whichever ones wish to participate, would have to pay the money to make it work. So that wouldn't cost the state.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kelly, what do you feel, or does this organization feel, is the cumulative or aggregate value of these four energy operations or any energy facilities? What do you feel their value is on there? What are they worth? What's, if you were to turn around and sell them on the open market or on, put them on eBay, what would you, what do you think they're worth?
Well, let me take a cut at that a little different way. Let's take Bradley Lake. If you take Bradley Lake Hydro Project, the utilities are all under agreement to pay off the debt. That is their only obligation to the Bradley Lake project, and they receive the power out of that project and pay off the debt and the operating costs, and that is the cost. So there's no markup on the energy as it goes to the Alaskans that receive that benefit, which is essentially all the rail belt projects. That covers Bradley. Relative to the Intertie, that is operated in a very similar fashion, except it is 100% owned by the state, and to my knowledge has no debt on it left. That's correct. So the utilities pay the cost of the operation of that project. Again, no markup on it to the citizens. Healy Clean Coal is a project which was built, and you'll hear some disagreement on this, but I will tell you, as one that was in there from the very beginning, the promise on Healy Clean Coal is that they would deliver a fully functional commercial power plant, and that didn't happen. And there, we could spend the rest of the day telling you why it didn't, but it didn't happen. And the clear evidence of it is it still sits 5 years later. So I think the utilities would tell you that they can make that plant run, but the cost of making it run as a commercial power plant is going to be significant, and the cost of re-permitting it, now that the permits have gone stale, air permits, NPDES, discharge permits, that sort of thing. So the utilities, I believe, would tell you the value of that is pretty near zero, and that they would, if there is a value that the state somehow requires, then it's the contention of the folks that support this bill that the legislature should determine that, so I think that gives you a snapshot of the three different projects. The utilities don't want extra charges above what has already been they are already paying on Bradley and the Intertie, because that's just raises the cost of power to our Alaskan citizens. And on Healy Clean Coal, evidence is clear. Somebody has to come in and do something. It's just costing the state money now and not doing anyone any good.
But
follow up,
Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. I would think that there would still be some equity in these. You know, I mean, there is some value in these. So I guess this bill would propose that I don't know if they would just hand it to the state. Do you expect the state to just give these?
Correct.
To this organization?
And the reason for that, if I might, the reason for that is that right now, if that weren't the case, just take Bradley. I think the utilities then would choose to just leave it with the state, and the state really doesn't want that. That came out of that study. The state wants to divest itself. And the utilities would just say, well, leave it with the state. All we're paying is the debt.
And Palmer then, or Anchorage.
Oh, no, this is a very successful project, which keeps your lights on 24/7. It's a very successful project.
And what, one more question. What's the long-range plan on how this would save the citizens of Alaska money?
The most obvious would be joint planning, joint dispatch, the most efficient dispatch of all these resources instead of separate control rooms for the different utilities. Financing opportunities where, because they aggregated, they could get better interest rates, lower financing costs. So the joint planning and the saving of the money and the unified system operator or joint system operator for efficiencies would have a huge advantage to the utilities and therefore the ratepayers. All these rate, you know, they're municipals and co-ops, so you don't have among the rail belt utilities, you don't have a private that hasn't changed, has it? Okay, you don't have a profit or a private utility. These are all owned by the people that that get the power out of them. Similar to your area.
But would it cut electric bills?
You bet.
By?
I don't know over time exactly how to quantify it. Maybe somebody that comes online could help you with that. I would be stabbing at a guess, so I don't know. But I have no doubt it would reduce the consultant costs, the engineering costs, the overhead burden of too many people managing separate units that could come together in one larger unit. So I think the efficiencies alone would be tremendous. I was in the business for 35 years, and I always thought this was where we wanted to end up. And it's been clear each time the legislature has looked at it that they've had the same sort of desire. It goes back to the committees that they formed and efforts that have been made to do this. It's just an effort. The effort now is to try to make sure how we can bring the players to the table, make it available to all of them, and make it work.
Can we get one more in there?
One more follow-up.
One more? because I think it's an important question. Thank you. Because MEA purchases a majority of their power from Chugach Power, this would make power generation cheaper in the long run for everybody. Would MEA see a reduction in the amount of their rates of what they purchase? Because MEA is not a power or a part of the JAA, correct? I mean, so would they see a reduction in their rates?
Two points there, Representative Newman. First, MEA would be invited to the table, and I've had a relationship with MEA for 35 plus years, and it's always been a good relationship and goes way back. And it is my fond hope that they will find a way to be full players in that, because their contract with Chugach lasts till 2014. In the power business with long-range planning, that's day after tomorrow. And so I hope they come to the table. And I've met with their people just as recently as about a week and a half ago. I understand their differences and some challenges, but it makes me no less convinced that these folks coming together would be the best thing for us, recognizing that you'll have to hear from each what they think this brings to them. But as far as dropping their rates, I hope that you'd ask that question to Chugach.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Ramirez and then Crawford.
Thank you, Madam. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kelly, I'm a tremendous supporter of HB 163, and for the benefit of the committee and those listening here and over the telephone, my intention is to offer an amendment to sell the Healy Clean Coal Plant to the Joint Action Agency for $10, and I'm going to offer that when it's appropriate as conceptual amendment number one. And I was hoping, Representative Kelly, that you could give us a brief history of the Healy Clean Coal Plant, because it is a tremendous embarrassment to the state and to the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority. It is a $300 million boondoggle that is sitting 90 miles out of town. It is probably the greatest, one of the greatest offenses that's been perpetrated against the good citizens of Alaska who have trusted the stewardship of ADA over the last few years, and they continue to be a very obstinate party in resolving this and creating some lemonade out of this giant box full of lemons that we've got sitting on a hill 90 miles outside of Fairbanks that has failed to produce anything of any value for anybody except some construction jobs here 5 and 10 years ago. And Representative Kelly, if you could just give us a two-minute tutorial on serial number 0001, and bearing in mind there will never be a 00 number 2 of the Healy Clean Coal Plant for the benefit of our committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll try to give the abbreviated version. And Madam Chair, I have a document, a white paper that I created that I would be happy if you wish I could supply that to you as well.
We'd appreciate it.
Okay, and I'll do that. And you should also recognize that what I give you in that white paper, in fairness to ADA, is not co-signed by them. So their take on things may be different from that. I was in it from the beginning until we turned the key to the left and it was shut down. But I just want to make it clear, in fairness to my friends at ADA, that there is a difference there, just as we talked earlier about some concerns that MEA has and others have. But I'm still trying to focus on the hilltop. So it was a project. The Healy Clean Coal Project is a 50,000 kilowatt project, which was the idea for it came in the late 80s. And it basically, the national program to reduce acid rain came out of a treaty with Canada, birthed the Clean Coal Technology Program. And they put out grants to build projects or to retrofit projects that would actually result in cleaner burning power plants. So Yusa Belli went to Washington essentially and convinced the folks there in Department of Energy that this might be a good place to try this technology. And the technology is called the slagging combustor technology, and it's a new technology. It never went anywhere, but it was new at that time. And Yusa Belli came back, got the legislature to put in about $25 million in seed money if the project were awarded. It was conditional, as I recall. And got ADA to come in as the banker owner of the project. And then ADA came to Golden Valley and asked us to buy the power out of it. And I was the one that met with Riley Snell at that time. And essentially told them, look, we're really nervous about trying a new technology in the toughest climate in the world, in the Healy Valley, where the wind blows you sideways and the temperatures are 50 below, and we have some real challenges, and we're on a pretty much a single line system without loops all over the place, and so we had some real concerns, suffice it to say. They said, well, thanks, we'll go talk to Anchorage. So they went to Anchorage, and if you'll recall, in those days, Anchorage had 50-cent gas. So, I mean, it was clear they weren't going to be able to sell it in Anchorage. So they soon came back to Fairbanks and asked us to, what would it take to get us on board? We said, what you're going to have to do is back into the power cost of gas delivered out of Anchorage over what was then the new Anchorage-Fairbanks Intertie, just been completed. It actually goes from Anchorage to Healy and hooks up to our system there, or their system now. But it essentially, we said it had to match that price of gas-fired energy delivered, and that was around 3 cents in those days, close. And then the second condition was that if you're going to test something here, let's just pretend it's a Buick, and you pull this Buick engine out and set it over here and put in this experimental thing. If it doesn't work just as well as or better than the latest technology at that time, then you jerk that stuff out, put the standard Buick engine in, and deliver the new Buick to us. Okay, they agreed to those things, and one additional thing was the thing had to be permitted such that you could use the experimental technology, but if it failed, you could switch out that engine, the combustors. So we talked about that for some time, back and forth, and they also agreed to support us in front of the Utilities Commission, the Public Utilities Commission at that time, now the RCA, to get approval on us accepting this contract, that and the commission was concerned about the impact on our ratepayers, and also they would support us in any of these permit activities that were required. So we went forward with the project. As it went on, the costs grew. Golden Valley and Usabelli actually contributed some money into the project, but as we went along, it became clear in the just before summer of 98, it became clear to Golden Valley at that time that this thing wasn't going to work. They were moving ahead. We actually were running a frame 7 turbine in Fairbanks just to keep the lights on from the hits that were occurring because of this plant. It just wasn't working, and it had been online since mid 77 or 97, and it was fired up first on oil and then on coal. But by mid 98, and we met with Ada. We pleaded with them, please, before you run out of money, let's jerk that technology out of there. It isn't working. It's serial number one, and it's not working. For some period of time, very short period of time, it seemed as if they were going to be willing to do that. And then very quickly, the person that had been brought up from the Northwest to on their behalf to negotiate the agreement was let go, sent home, and we went to a new mode, which was they're going to finish this plant. And in my opinion, their attempt, they were going to finish the plant and try to get us to take it no matter what. And so what happened is, they finished it, and there was a lawsuit along the way between Golden Valley sued them. They countersued back and forth. We finally shut the plant down after it failed to pass its commercial test. It's still shut down. The lawsuit was settled. That lawsuit said that Golden Valley had the option of walking away or participating with Ada in some sort of a retrofit. And I think even later, Golden Valley then selected the walk-away option. And so that's where we are. It sits. It didn't work. There will never be a serial number two. The TRW contractor unit that developed the experimental project shut that business unit down. They predicted that people would come from all over the world to test their coal there, and that it would be an exportable technology. Nothing could be further from the truth. There isn't another one anywhere, and there's not going to be another one anywhere. So it didn't perform. And, Madam Chair, I'm sorry for going so long, but I'd have gone longer if I gave you the whole load of hay.
Did that answer your question?
Oh, perfectly.
All right, Representative Croft.
No, Crawford.
Crawford, I apologize.
The look-alike, that's all.
You're a very handsome man.
Very handsome.
Crawford. More handsome.
Yeah, you bet.
So, I guess my question would be moot if the amendment goes through for the $10 purchase price. I was going to ask how much debt we were talking about with Bradley Lake and Healy. And I was thinking, is it a good deal to buy Healy for the amount of the debt that still owed on it? Because, you know, frankly, if Golden Valley didn't like it before, didn't want to take it, is it a good deal for the Joint Action Agency today?
Right. Madam Chair, no, it wouldn't be if the utility or the Joint Action Agency had to actually pay off the debt, which I don't know exactly how much that is right now, but Ada, the total cost of the plant was over $300 million. Their actual current debt on the plant, they've written it down, down some portions of it. I'm really not honestly sure what it is. Perhaps Ada's online, I don't know. But that would not be a good deal, because then you'd have to put the additional dollars in. And Representative Crawford, if that deal would have worked, we'd have had a deal right after it was shut down, because I'm sure Ada would have wanted to have their current debt extinguished, transfer the keys to the plant, and say, Golden Valley, make it work. So I think it's fair to say that ask Golden Valley what they think it's worth. They may think that Representative Ramirez is ripping them off. I'm not sure.
So the total amount of the debt under this bill for Bradley Lake and Healy Clean Coal would be?
Bradley Lake would just continue to be paid off. There would be no financial transaction to extinguish the bonds. The title would be transferred along with the debt obligation into the JAA, and the utilities would continue to make the monthly payments. So that's how that would be extinguished, but I don't honestly know the balance of the debt, sir.
That was the question.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Crawford. If there are not any other questions, Representative Ramirez.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. But Representative Kelly, if I could ask you, just in trying to establish a value for the Healy Clean Coal Plant, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline right now, we run 900,000 or a million barrels of oil through it a day. So it has value that's defined because its defined purpose is happening. If we ran out of oil on the North Slope and all we had was an empty pipeline, we could do two things with it. We could either leave it there in place to rust, or we could tear it down. And I imagine, and you could maybe validate this for me, please, Representative Kelly, that there would be a considerable cost if we opted to rip it down and to clean up the landscape. And I would ask you to comment on the same kind of expression of value as it relates to the Healy Clean Coal Plant, because if it sits there and does nothing, it's just going to rust, and eventually it's going to be a liability to tear the darn thing down to dirt. And if you could comment on that for me, please.
Yes, Representative Ramos, I'd prefer to have, we have Steve Hagenson, who is the President and CEO of Golden Valley, and I'd rather have him comment on that because he's much more current on that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Great. Thank you. Sure. All righty. Any other questions for Representative Kelly? All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
At this point, what I'd like to do is go to those folks in the audience who have flown in to testify, and then we have several people online. So if I could invite Lee Jordan to come forward and state your name and affiliation, please, for the record.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Lee Jordan, and I serve as president of the Board of Directors of Matanuska Electric Association. MEA is a nonprofit, member-owned electric cooperative serving close to 50,000 customers in both Chugiak Eagle River and the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. MEA is the second largest electric utility in the state, measured by number of customers, and we are the first largest utility when measured by total mileage of our system, which currently stands at approximately 3,600 miles of energized line. Madam Chairman, if I may interrupt my written comments here to say that you're going to be hearing from me, from someone who is far less versed than the previous speaker. I'm here to talk about the bill itself and the philosophy that MEA offers. I want to say right now that MEA is very anxious to see a unified system operator established and to operate the system for the benefit of all electric customers in the Rail Belt area. We have proposed we called it power pooling years ago, and then a cooperative G&T, and now the label that appears on it is joint action agency. So we're very much in favor of this concept, but we do see some problems with the proposal. So with that preface, I'll go ahead. I'm here today to offer MEA's perspective on House Bill 163. We believe that House Bill 163, at least in its current form, does not help advance the interest of all electric customers in the interconnected rail belt. Our concerns can best be understood if I first call your attention to the findings and recommendations of the Alaska Energy Policy Task Force contained in the report it released in December of 2003. As members may recall, the Energy Policy Task Force was created by the legislature and included members appointed by the governor, the Senate president, and the Speaker of the House. MEA had a representative serving on this task force. One of the key recommendations of the Energy Policy Task Force was that the Rail Belt electric grid from Homer to Fairbanks should be operated by a unified system operator. In other words, as if the total generation and transmission system were owned and operated by a single entity. In fact, the task force report in 10 different places makes reference to the importance of having a unified system operator. Specifically with regard to the state's energy assets, the task force recommended, and I quote, current state ownership of energy assets should be transferred to a unified system operator to support the cooperation of the utilities in that endeavor, end quote. So in theory, transfer of the state's energy assets to a unified rail belt system operator is something MEA could support. Our problem, however, is that the structure recommended in House Bill 163 does not equate to unified system operation. In fact, the approach suggested by House Bill 163 will exacerbate tensions that already exist among the rail belt utilities, making the formation of a true unified system even less likely than if we simply did nothing. The shortcomings of House Bill 163 can be seen in the very title of the bill, which makes reference to transferring state-owned power projects to, and I quote, a joint action agency composed of three or more rail belt utilities, end quote. The problem here should be obvious. There are not three utilities in the interconnected rail belt. There are, in fact, six. If the state is going to divest ownership of power projects it owns, that transfer should benefit all the consumers of the rail belt, not just some. At a bare minimum, this legislation should be amended to require that the state's energy assets can be transferred only to a joint action agency consisting of all six utilities in the rail belt, and only to a JAA that is structured so that the member utilities are functioning in a truly unified fashion. And here again, I'll ad lib a bit to say that Representative Kelly described how this would work, but as we reviewed the bill and as I prepared my testimony, that was not in the bill. And so that's why we think some of these items should be spelled out so that they are known. A true unified system operation means that the six utilities would manage all their generation and transmission resources as if they were one company. The individual utilities might retain legal title and ownership over specific facilities they may own, but the beneficial use of those facilities would be pledged for all consumers in the rail belt from Homer to Fairbanks. The advantages of this structure would be numerous. A unified system would centralize all power dispatch functions so that only the most efficient mix of generation is being utilized to meet the system demand that exist at any particular time. This saves on fuel as well as operations and maintenance expense, which mean consumers save money. A unified system also means that any future generation projects can be planned so as to benefit all consumers of the rail belt. In addition, the ability of future projects to qualify for financing will be enhanced because of the much larger pool of ratepayers who will be generating revenues to support the investment. MEA believes that the logical result of a unified system operation would be a uniform rate for the wholesale purchase of electricity. With a uniform rate for wholesale energy, all consumers in the rail belt would benefit equally from any state or federal grants that have been given to support electric generation projects in the past and any that might be received in the future. Likewise, the cost associated with any new projects would be shared equally among all ratepayers in the rail belt, a fact that should promote more fiscally prudent decisions regarding major capital investments. House Bill 163 is far removed from this vision of a unified system operator. It directs the transfer of state-owned assets to an unnamed joint action agency. We don't know who will belong to this JAA. We don't know how it will be governed. We don't know what type of state oversight, if any, will be provided to protect the interest of electric power consumers. There are still other issues. We don't know whether membership in this JA will be open to any and all independent power producers who may wish to construct generation facilities and then bid to make power sales to the Rail Belt utilities. Independent power producers add a competitive element to our electric generation system, and that competition benefits consumers. We also don't know if the utilities joining this JAA will embark upon one or two or any projects in common. We don't know if these utilities belonging to the JAA would even choose to operate the state-owned assets transferred to their control. House Bill 163 does not include any absolute requirement related to true unified system operations, as I previously described, even though that unified operation is essential to achieving operational efficiencies and saving consumers money. In conclusion, Madam Chairman, we believe there are so many deficiencies and so many unanswered questions about this legislation that it needs to be significantly modified before MEA could consider supporting it. Thank you for your time this evening. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I had a chance to listen to similar arguments like this, I mean, our testimony several times now, and I still am not sure why it is that MEA and the other Rail Belt utilities aren't able to agree on what it takes to get into a unified system operator. Seems to be that it would benefit everybody to have one operator or somebody that's responsible for seeing where the cheapest power is coming at the different times, but it never seems to get there. And I was just wondering if you could fill me in on why we're not there yet.
Through the chair, Representative Crawford, I wish I knew the answer to that. The only thing I can say is that we have not been successful in selling the idea of cooperating among the utilities to get together and pool all their resources to put this into operation. As I said, MEA has espoused this idea for years, but maybe it's because we do not have our own generating facilities and don't have a real dog in this fight until a few years from now. But maybe we're not looking at it with the ownership question in mind, that some people are trying to protect their ownership. We don't know the answer for that. We'd like to see it happen.
Follow-up?
I'll just listen for a while. I may get back into it later.
Thank you, Representative Coghill.
You bring up a good point. A unified system could operate. These big earthquakes within the different agencies are going to be certainly tough to handle. But is it because, let me ask you this first. What is the asset and hardware that you guys have? Because I think you strike a good point that you're not generating, but you must have a huge asset that you're managing with regard to transmission.
Distribution, we have a very significant asset in our distribution lines, yes, but we do not generate power.
I'm trying to get at you know, how somebody who is going to join a joint action agency, it says right here in the statute already that two or more may form a joint action agency for the purpose of in design, construction, operation, and maintenance of generating transmission facilities. And so you're limited in there. Yours is going to be the transmission. So is there something that you can bring to the table that that encourages them in a unified system that we're not aware of, or is there something that they're not listening to?
I'm not sure what the problem is. We have an agreement presently that requires us to buy all of our power from basically from Chugach. And so we have not been generating anything and have not been involved in that. I might defer to Tuckerman Babcock for a more specific answer to your question.
Okay. Well, no, I was just trying to get a mental picture of how this world works. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Jordan? All right.
Thank you, ma'am,
for your testimony. Next in line to testify is Steve Haggison. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me testify today.
You want to do it? Or?
My name is Stephen Haggison. I am the President and Chief Executive Officer of Golden Valley Electric Association. It's fitting to have this bill before the committee today because this is the Economic Development Committee. It's part of your title. And one of the things that's required for development of the economy is access, and the other one that we're going to talk about more is affordable power or energy. Critical. Without either one of those things, you won't have, will not have economic development or economic growth. This bill is really a part of a bigger energy picture across Alaska. It's not just, I mean, this is a little piece of it. There's a much bigger picture I'm going to talk about in a few seconds. In 2003, I was appointed to be a member of the Energy Policy Task Force. I went through all the testimony, got my input into it. And at the end of that year, for the Rail Belt system, we actually issued a report. And get my glasses on here and read this report to you, or part of this report to you. And I'm going to give you the vision statement first for the Energy Policy Task Force. Here's the vision statement. Alaska will have reliable, economic, sustainable, and secure power supplies for its citizens. That's our goal. Now, the energy policy also had another recommendation, and I'm going to quote this also. All other considerations being equal, projects should in general not be owned, operated, or maintained by the state. The state should encourage rail belt utilities to accept ownership of state-owned rail belt energy assets to reduce bureaucracy, thereby reducing state expenses and offering utilities the benefits of long-term ownership. End quote. The task force also recommended several organizational models. You heard about some of them earlier. One was power pooling, a joint action agency, and a generation and transmission cooperative. Each of these has its benefits, and some of them have fatal flaws. Two of them, we believe, have fatal flaws. And I'll get into the needs of why we're doing the joint action agency was selected above the other two options. Four of the six rail belt utilities currently support the joint action agency model. And this is not the big versus the little, because one of the people that supports it right now is the city of Seward, one of the smallest utilities in the rail belt of the six. And some people will tell you that there's seven, and they try to include Aurora Energy and Fairbanks. I don't believe that they're one of the rail belt utilities because they're not party to the Bradley Lake contracts or the Intertie contracts, and they're also a for-profit utility. The Rail Belt Energy Study in 2003, five of the six rail belt utilities joined to conduct a rail belt-wide energy study. This is the first time I can recall in my 29 years at Golden Valley that the rail belt utilities have gotten together and actually participated in this kind of level. It's never happened. There was one utility that said, well, you know what our loads are, don't bother us. They're not a non-generating utility, but they're in the process of actually planning some generation right now. But historically, each utility on the rail belt would do their own planning. That limits you. You cannot get to a regional mentality when you do that. You're limited to small units. The biggest unit I would ever put in our system is a 60-megawatt unit. When you start thinking regionally, you start thinking about 200-megawatt units. A lot of benefits. Representative Newman asked the question about the benefits of having a joint action agency in this ability. That's one of them. You can get economies of scale from larger generation units. The Rail Belt study did not look at new loads like Donlin Creek. It's about 100-megawatt load out by McGrath. It did not look at Copper Pebble, 200-megawatt load by Lake Eliomna. And it did not look at the effects of a gas line coming through Alaska, which could be somewhere between 10 to 400 megawatts of load increase in Alaska. The question is, how do you meet those kind of load increases? You've got to have a funding mechanism. The Rail Belt study also found that there was excess generation in the Kenai, a deficiency in generation of Anchorage due to the retirement of units in the Anchorage Municipal Light and Power System, and additional generation needed in the Fairbanks area due to increased loads. Today, most generation in the Rail Belt is 30 years old. And it doesn't last 50 years, it doesn't last 40 years. So in the next 10 years, we'll be replacing about 1,000 megawatts of generation. These are excerpts out of the Energy Policy Task Force. If you'd like, I'll pass them around for you. I'm not sure how to get them into your hands, but I'll figure that out later. So how do you replace 1,000 megawatts of electricity or generation, and what's it going to cost you? Thank you. The cost right now is somewhere between $1 to $2 billion in the next 10 years. How do you finance that? You can't go to a power pool and say, oh, just put your assets in this pit and make it work. You've got to have a funding mechanism. You can't go to a GMT because you have to, they have individual funding mechanisms also, and you're just putting your units in there. And munis can't, or municipalities are not allowed to join GMTs and take debt under a GMT. So how do you finance this? Larger plants, like I said earlier, will give you economies of scale. It helps us out a lot, but you know, I guess right now as I see it, if we don't do something fast, we're going to have a train wreck in 10 years. It'll be painful. Our power rates will skyrocket if we even have the capacity to make it work. Okay, this is kind of a bad picture for the Rail Belt system, but I'm trying to give it to you early instead of waiting until the lights are getting ready to go out. But I have good news for you. We have 10 years, right? So we need to get our act together, start moving forward in a direction that's going to benefit Rail Belt of Alaska and effectively the state of Alaska. The Joint Action Agency allows us to get together and do regionally sized plants, but more importantly, it allows us to finance those large plants. When we're looking at $1 to $2 billion, it's a big thing to finance that. So how do you do that, and how do you keep the cost down as you do that implementation? So what we're looking at, we've been working with the Four Dam Pool, Senator Stevens' office, to see if we can get tax-exempt bonding for the Joint Action Agency. This is not available to a power pool. It is not available to a GMT. And it may not be available to a Joint Action Agency, but we're trying to pull it off right now for the benefit of all of the state of Alaska. In April 2004, ADA sent a letter to each Rail Belt utility which quoted the Alaska Energy Authority's 1996 annual report is saying, it has been the AEA policy since the legislative reorganization in 1993 to transfer ownership and operation of energy assets to local utilities and get AEA out of the energy business to the maximum extent feasible. As a requirement of transferring these assets, AEA has recently put on two conditions. One should be, you should have a unified system operator. Now, you're probably wondering, what the heck is a unified system operator, right? And you know what? Probably nobody in this room knows. Everybody probably thinks of it a little bit different. It could be a GNT. It could be, all it is somebody who's going to reach around and make this whole system operate as one unit. The way this JAA, which has been formed now and has four members in, very interested in becoming, making this happen, is it would be to join that, the Rail Belt system operator. It's the one place you go to get financing. You can go to them and say, I need about another 10 megawatts of load. How can you provide it? They'll do the regional planning, pull it all together, build a plant. Once you backstop it with a power sales agreement, and that will give you the best available pricing for power across the Rail Belt. The other condition they put on was the divestiture should be open to all Rail Belt utilities who wish to be included. This is the case with the Joint Action Agency that we have today. Everybody can join. And it's not like if you get in first, you get extra deals. Everybody has the same deal. It was structured that way specifically for the group we have now. The Alaska Rail Belt and Bradley Lake, Alaska Intertie and Bradley Lake are owned by Alaska Energy Authority. And all the projects have been legally, all the benefits of this whole project, both these projects, have been given to the utilities under agreement. We have an Alaska Intertie agreement and we have a Bradley Lake agreement. There's an operating committee which operates Bradley. We pay, all the utilities pay all the costs of Bradley Lake, and we also backstop all the bonds. So the questions earlier about, well, what will happen to the bonds on Bradley? Nothing. They will be transferred over directly to the utilities, and the utilities have an obligation to pay those bonds off no matter what. So there's no change at all on Bradley Lake. On the Alaska Intertie, there's no debt service currently on there. There may be some in the very near future. But again, those would be backstopped by the utilities in that position. Under the Gila Clean Coal, Mike gave you the older part of history. If you have any questions about the more recent part, I'd be happy to answer those at a later date. But Gila Clean Coal has a long history. I've been around for most of it, and I've been right on the cutting edge, by the bleeding edge, I guess, of that issue for the last 5 years. So I guess to wrap it up, we need to start now to pursue the additional critical infrastructure to achieve the goal of the Alaska Energy Policy Task Force, which is for Alaskans to have the reliable, economic, sustainable, and secure power supplies for its citizens. This bill truly is a piece of a bigger picture in the energy picture in Alaska, and I would request your support both in this committee and in the legislature as this moves through to the governor's desk for approval. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions from committee members? I can sense one from Representative Coffey.
Just
or statement.
Actually, just a question between the structure, say a joint action agency would be from a transmission cooperative, a generation and transmission cooperative, because I think the question was asked earlier about how would you form, and I just kind of doing just a brief look at it here, and it looks like it could go either way under our statutes as far as formulating, and so it's a matter of operation, I think, more than organization. Or do you see barriers to, say, a cooperative under transmission and generation?
Yes, Mr. Representative Coghill, I do have some barriers in that. The barrier that we've been told by council is that municipalities are not allowed to take debt out under a G&T cooperative.
So it'd be a miss.
And so, and now in this mix we have right now, there are four cooperatives and there are two municipalities, one being Anchorage Municipal Light and Power, and the other being City of Seward. So I think that's a fatal flaw.
Okay.
And so when you kick that one out, you look at power pooling, it doesn't give you the financing you need. The only really model we have to go by is a joint action agency. And we looked for guidance in the past, and we looked and found that the Four Dam Pool is a great model of success in how to divest state assets and put them into a mix for the joint benefit of all the utilities involved.
One other question: with the tension between four utilities getting together and two or three maybe being outside of that, could it possibly be that we'd end up with competing joint action agencies, or I'm trying to look at how a state might look at that and say, here we have two formulating, what are we going to do in divestiture?
I guess it's possible to have two or three joint action agencies under the statute, but what you have right now is the three generating utilities are all in agreement on this thing.
Okay.
So that we should all be together in that, you know, Seward, I think, is we'll call them a quasi, they have some generators, but they're also in agreement that we should go down this path. And I think you should go to the people and give deference to the people who actually have experience generating, and figure out, you know, we're responsible right now for the long-term planning of the rail belt, the three of us, and generation, making sure we have reliable supply. And I think those three are definitely qualified to make the call on this thing.
Follow up.
This is probably more education for me than anything. But so when you have a joint action agency, there certainly is agreements, but what's the autonomy to, for example, and I have to declare a conflict. I actually belong to a cooperative that is operating under this fella's leadership. So,
a valued member.
A valued member, that's right. But I'm just wondering if under a joint action agency agreement, what autonomy is relinquished and what is retained? Can you give us some idea?
Yes. Right now, we're trying to keep all the agreements we have in place as best you can. The Four Dam Pool, the way it was structured, is that everybody can get in. All transactions will be governed by power sales agreement, which means that if you want power, you come to me, or if I'm the joint action agency, you come to me and say, well, I need about 50, 100 megawatts of power, and I would say, okay, how am I going to secure my debt? The way I'd secure that debt before I went out to the bond market is I would get a power sales agreement from you that said you're going to pay me after I build this power plant so I can make sure I can pay off that generation plant. That's an arm's length transaction. And one of the things where when you get into every you've got to be in mandatory required membership doesn't work, because if you can do it cheaper in your backyard than I can do it as a joint action agency, you should be able to do that. And I'm willing to let you try it. Go for it. But you've got to make sure that you're trying to get the best thing for your members. That's your charge. And the joint action agency needs to look out for its best interest. But what it can do is give you a lot more access to low debt or low cost money. So I think, you know, and we've gone through long discussions as we put together the articles of incorporation and the bylaws for the joint action agency to make sure that you aren't getting special privileges because you're in first or because of your size. You get one vote, one member gets one vote. We did not vote by shares of interest you have in different projects because it comes unmanageable. So we try to say, you know, your job is to take off your hat. If you're a board member on the Golden Valley board member goes in there, is to take off your hat, Golden Valley hat, and park it at the door, and now you have your JAA hat on, and you have a fiduciary responsibility to the JAA to make the right decision. That answer your question?
Yeah, just like I had to take my valued member hat off and honestly trying to give an honest hearing on this. And I know we have debt issues, but we also have what I would consider organizational issues that need to be dealt with along the way. And so just trying to work my mind through this.
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, we have Eric Yule. Let's take your affiliation, please. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Eric Yule. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Power Association. This is the trade association for the electric utility industry in Alaska, and those members that I represent generate about 90% of the electricity throughout the state of Alaska, so I represent both the big guys and the little guys. The issue before you today really is a rail belt issue, and there are six utilities in the rail belt: Seward, Homer, Chugach Electric, Anchorage Municipal Light and Power, Golden Valley up in Fairbanks, and Matanuska Electric Association. Unfortunately, MEA is the single of those six that is not a member of my trade association. I sincerely wish they were, but nevertheless, they are an outstanding member of our community. The board of directors of the Power Association have gone on record through its own resolution process to be in support of the overall philosophy and policies that came out of the Alaska Energy Policy Task Force. And basically, the task force, as Mr. Jordan mentioned earlier, recommended in favor of divestiture of these rail belt assets, the Intertie, Healy Clean Coal, and Bradley Lake, to a unified system operator. And then this Energy Policy Task Force identified what was, in fact, a unified system operator and identified joint action agencies, generation and transmission cooperatives, and power pools as the business models that theoretically would come under this unified system operator. Madam Chair, the main reason that my trade association would endorse this bill, and my board has not had the opportunity to specifically look at all the nuts and bolts elements of it, are because so long as a joint action agency is put together to receive these assets, and let's assume for the moment that there's only two or three entities that would be part of this joint action agency, the state of Alaska cannot divest itself of its assets and by so doing break its existing contractual obligation to all six of the utilities in the rail belt, which basically means that if they were to assign their projects to the joint action agency, call it Rail Belt Joint Action Agency, that agency would have to agree to uphold the terms and conditions of those contracts for those three projects, which basically means that any benefit that would accrue would be allocated to all six of the utilities, not just the three in the joint action agency. And because that in itself preserves for all six of the utilities in the rail belt the benefits that they presently get from these projects, with the possible exception of Healy Clean Coal, my board of directors, I believe, would be very supportive of this bill. Madam Chair, as everybody knows, roughly 4 years ago, the legislature agreed to the divestiture of the four-dam pool to the communities that those four hydropower projects serve. And there was a lot of question at the time as to whether or not this fledgling joint action agency had the wherewithal to operate a $458 million asset of the state or not. And as a matter of fact, I think that if you were to go backward and or go forward in time now to today, some 3 years, 4 years after this divestiture has taken place, and ask the utilities that and the communities that make up now what's called the four-dam pool, I'm speculating, because I've been watching them on a daily basis because they're in the same building that I am, that they would say that it's been a resounding success. Certainly they have their internal, you know, policy discussions and debates, but nevertheless, I think that they would tell you that they did the right thing. I think that the state of Alaska, if you were to ask them, Ada, was it a good deal for you? I think that the state, and I'm speculating here, but I believe that Ada would say, darn right. We went ahead and divested ourselves of a tremendous ongoing risk that otherwise they had responsibility for. Before assuming the asset from the state, the four dam pool communities actually had a audit done of those four facilities to try and identify the going into the future risks that they were going to be picking up. And the engineering company that did that study concluded that there was something like $150 million going forward that the four dam pool communities would be picking up in responsibility, but at the same time the state would be losing. And of course that's the main, one of the main reasons that the state would like to and wanted at the time to see that asset divested to the private sector. So the upshot is, I think that Four Dam Pool Joint Action Agency has been a resounding success. I think that if the state does divest itself of these assets to the Rail Belt Joint Action Agency, because of the contractual obligation that they presently have to flow through the benefits to all six utilities in the Rail Belt, I really think that this is something that would represent a win-win for all parties as well. And that concludes my testimony.
Thank you. Any questions for members of the committee? All right, appreciate your testimony, and I'm sure we'll be...
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative.
It's a curious question, but I just don't know how to ask it because I'm trying, and Madam Chair, I'm trying to figure out, you said the benefit accrues to all six, and so I'm just trying to see how that works. If three or four organizes a JEA and yet the benefit must accrue, how is that practically played out? Maybe you should flesh that out a little bit for me, if you don't mind, Madam
Good
Chair.
Question.
I think that administratively, they will have to assume the terms and conditions that are presently in place between ADA and the six communities, contractually. And ADA is not going to say, look, we're just going to cut off two utilities here because we want these assets to go to this joint action agency. They are going to require, as part of the sale proceedings, that this new entity agree to the allocation of the benefits as well as the risks that are presently in place. And if after that transaction takes place, one of the utilities that perhaps is not a member of the joint action agency years down the line says, hey, wait a minute, I'm not getting the full benefit that I need out of this thing, they have recourse either through the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, I would presume, or certainly through the court system. So they can't just have their benefit that they presently have abrogated altogether.
So I'm a simple guy, so I'm trying to follow you. So then what is the obligation that the joint action agency members carry above the people that choose not to join into the joint action agency? It's anything above and beyond that obligation, I take it.
To operate those three projects, or at least two of those three projects, in the same cost, at least in the same cost-effective manner that they are presently being operated under the tutorship of ADA, and hence would essentially, for instance, out of Bradley Lake, be paying back to all the utilities benefits that come directly out of Bradley Lake, as a for instance, because all of the utilities presently own a portion of Bradley Lake. Separate deal that we have in the rail belt is the Eklutna Hydropower Project. It's also a project that is jointly owned by the utilities, and the benefits accrue back to those utilities in a proportionate share of their ownership. So the same would happen here.
That's a digest.
Good for now? Okay. Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. Next, we have Sam, is it Kaysen or Carson?
Kaysen.
Kaysen, welcome. Please come and identify yourself and your affiliation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sam Kaysen, C-A-S-O-N. I'm a director at Chugach Electric Association, one of the cooperatives that's signed up to be a member of the JAA. I'm not a electrical industry expert. I don't participate in the goings-on on a daily basis. Like Mr. Jordan, I'm a board member. I take a little more of an eagle-eye view of things rather than the minutia. The Chugach Electric Board does support House Bill 163 and would like to see it passed because of what it does for the future. The JAA, as has been, as you've heard, provides a vehicle for future projects. We're talking about creating an organization that can look out and prevent the train wreck that Mr. Higginson spoke of earlier. Now, the first testimony after the sponsors this afternoon spoke of this bill potentially exacerbating existing problems, and I'm not sure what those are, but through the chair, I would like to say that I hope the boards can get together. You know, Chugach Electric Board of Directors would like to meet with boards of other utilities and other cooperatives and find out what problems there might not be. Talk about those things. What are the benefits to the state? Imagine, if you will, a piece of cast steel, highly machined, larger than this desk that I'm sitting at. That's a Pelton wheel that catches the water. Right now, the Pelton wheel at Bradley Lake has developed some cracks. They don't know exactly why. If AEA divests itself of Bradley Lake, it doesn't run the risk of having to fix that Pelton wheel if it breaks. I've seen pictures of a Pelton wheel that broke in Switzerland. It went through a foot-thick concrete wall. Because of the benefits for the future, Chugach sees that that is a risk worth taking. We are willing to assume the liability with the rest of the JAA participants for the repayment, partly because we already have that obligation. It doesn't change. Partly because we are guaranteed power from Bradley Lake. But we're guaranteed power from Bradley Lake now. That doesn't change. All that really changes is title, which now resides in AEA, moves over to JAA. As far as Bradley Lake is concerned, that is all that happens. As far as the intertie from Healy to Willow goes, that's all that happens. Healy Clean Coal is a terrible problem. It needs a lot of study. It needs to be fixed. There's various ways that have been proposed to fix it. I haven't heard any of them come in cheap. I'm not going to go on. I don't have prepared comments, but if anyone would like to ask a question of me as a board member that you might not have the technical background, I'd be happy to address them.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions? Not yet, but there will be for this committee. Thank you very much. Next, we have Joe Griffith. Welcome.
It's good to be here, Madam Chair, and thank you for having a hearing. I think this is a very important bill to the future of the state of Alaska, and I applaud your hearing on it. The Joint Action Agency is the future of the rail belt. As you have heard, it's a milestone already in the fact that the three generating utilities in the rail belt are speaking the same language. That has never occurred before in the 50 years that we've had a system in the rail belt. This HB 163 is the right thing to do. This is the future. The future is now. Your action on HB 164 was very timely and appropriate, and I again applaud your efforts in moving that bill on down the road. That's another good one, and I think you can take pride in the outcome of that if it's a success. You have copies of the extract of the task force report. They've been highlighted for the main issues, and you've heard testimony from both supporters and opposition regarding what the Energy Task Force report says. The Joint Action Agency is clearly a unified system operator. We operate the system in a unified manner today. It has happened over time, but we are there. And in the near future, we will likely build a centralized dispatch and backup dispatch facility for the whole rail belt. It is made up of the generating utilities, and that's a distinction that you must take care to note. There are distribution utilities in the rail belt that principally deliver generated power to members, and there are people who have the ultimate responsibility for generating it, transmitting it, and that includes reliability, reserves, and what have you. That's is a daunting challenge, and you heard some of the numbers about what that might cost in the future. What better group to take the state assets over than the people who are responsible for this today? The bulk of the costs of operating and maintaining the assets is already borne by the Joint Action Agency members today. There's not a great change to transferring those over. It is appropriate to make these entities fully responsible and get government out of the loop. Government has said they want out of the loop. We should make it easy for them to do that. A method to get rational thought process underway for dealing with Healy Clean Coal is probably through the Joint Action Agency proposal. 5 years have gone by with a lot of rhetoric regarding that facility, and it still sits idle. In short, this bill is strongly supported by the JAA members, that's Golden Valley, Chugach, and MLNP, and we believe it will ensure a stability in energy supplies for the rail belt for our lifetime. The four-dam pool is alive and well. The foresight of the legislature made it a going concern, and it is working well today. The example is set. This is where we want to go and where we need to go for the future. It is economic development, as you have heard, and it's the grease that makes the economy work in the rail belt, which is the bulk of the economy of the state of Alaska. So it's incumbent upon you to take this action and to ensure that the state assets fall into the right block there. There was discussion earlier about nobody knows who is the Joint Action Agency or how it would operate. I think the example is already set. We have the four-dam pool example, and we have the example of the three major utilities already exercising centralized dispatch and most economic dispatch. A question came up about how do the benefits accrue to all. The benefits accrue by virtue of protection of the existing agreements. No one has suggested that any of those would change, and there's no reason they would. And what is the obligation of the Joint Action Agency? It's to operate them in an efficient and effective, prudent manner. It's to ensure low-cost power. It's to ensure reliability. It's to ensure reserves, and that future power supplies and fuel supplies will be available. And if you think that isn't a multi-billion-dollar daunting task, then please look closely at it. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I kind of pose the same question to you. Is Healy Clean Coal a good deal if you assume the debt? How much debt is there? What's the price? It wasn't a good deal for GVEA by itself. Is it a good deal for the Joint Action Agency?
Healy Clean Coal has about $73 million worth of debt, if I recall correctly. That's a pretty heavy debt load for a plant that hasn't run for 5 years. Is it worth that amount of debt? You can hear stories on both sides, Representative Crawford. I think the current number is that it would take $60 million to make a conversion to a conventional plant for all the reasons that Representative Kelly gave you. And the theory is that it's worth about $60 million now, so the net value would be about zero. Now, how you deal with your load of debt on that remains to be seen. I personally believe, having spent a lot of my life in financing, that there's a ways to do a workaround, that if a joint action agency were handed the plant, certainly there would be a long negotiation period with ADA to ensure that somehow they were duly compensated for the value of the facility. Now, whether that means restructuring a debt or what have you, or perhaps a premium on power sales produced by the plant, it is a daunting task. You're absolutely right.
Follow up.
Earlier, we were given the example of switching the engine on the Buick. If we did switch the engine on the Buick, what would we get wholesale power for?
I think the current best estimate is a converted plant, again, depending upon what you think you could convert it for, probably would have power in the range of $55 to $60 a megawatt hour. That's greater than Representative Kelly negotiated, as I recall, back years ago when the project first was born. But it is in the range of competitive power to certain of the units that are available in the rail belt today. So if you could make the conversion and you could produce $50 or $60 power, and you might have to have some help from the coal producers to make that happen, then in all likelihood you could market the output of the plant.
Could you change that to cents per kilowatt? Because that's the only thing I've...
5 cents per kilowatt, 5 to 6 cents per kilowatt hour.
Representative Coghill.
It's a good question. Madam Chair, it looks like the Healy Clean Coal thing is a fixer-upper issue because you do have a debt, but you also have an existing infrastructure.
Yes.
And so the cost of building one like that in comparable megawatts would be significantly more than assuming the debt on this and whatever improvement. So you have $120 million into making it a whole and viable plant, but it's already been said that we have well over $300 million into it. So it is a fixer-upper. So does a joint action agency then restructure the debt under a combined effort of the different utilities, spread that out, where does the debt go? Do you walk away from the state saying, we're going to negotiate that? It seems in this bill they have to take the full debt as far as the 73 point whatever million. But my guess is that's all that's that in this bill is to be negotiated. That means that the infrastructure is for $10 or less. And so what I'm asking is how do you spread that out in a joint action agency where maybe a single utility couldn't?
I think the only way you could get there, Representative Coghill, would be to have a power sales arrangement worked up that with a customer who would take the output of the plant, and then you would have to have probably some help from the state in conduit financing to, and hopefully that could be tax-exempt financing to reduce the cost for it, and substantial workout of the debt. It is today pretty much non-performing debt. And I guess I don't have any real firm idea how you might get there, but I think it will be an item of much discussion before any of the utilities would ever agree to accept anything but a guaranteed supply of power from it at a certain price. That's a typical utility approach to a power sales agreement.
Madam Chair, and I appreciate that. That drills down a little deeper than probably I want to go. I liked the 40,000-foot level a little while ago because I understand it a little better, but just trying to figure out how somebody would be willing to assume it and spread the cost out. So I am in agreement, though, however, that the government shouldn't be in the power generation business, and so I appreciate discussion.
Good. Happy to discuss it with you.
Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm under the impression that the JAA, once it was formed, having spoken to a lot of the primary folks that are part of it, don't want the debt and don't want to pay anything for the Healy Clean Coal Plant, and that it's going to be carried as a non-performing asset, that sooner or later somebody's going to have to eat this waste. And Madam Chair, that's precisely what I was driving at in my initial remarks, is that sooner or later we're going to have to pay the piper for this huge, colossal waste of money. And there is a very overt effort by ADA and AEA to pin it on this formation of this JAA to take over that debt, to kind of hide or sweep under the rug this probably the single greatest black eye that the state of Alaska carries is on this clean coal plant. And so my expectation is that the JAA would not assume this $73 million in debt, and that really what we have is a case where ADA is trying to force it on the utility. The utility made a vain final attempt, Golden Valley certainly did, before they walked away, and that nobody wants to assume the debt. And it's a lot like the seafood processing plant in Anchorage, except exponentially worse, and every day that goes by that this empty facility is allowed to depreciate and rust a little bit more, it becomes a greater liability for the state of Alaska. And the best thing that the state can do is for ADA to eat its debt, sell the utility for $10, and let the JAA get on with making something good out of something horrible that happened over the last 10 years. People should have gone to jail over what has transpired over the last 5 years. And I think some of your folks here are being polite and not saying so, but I am. That's my question, I guess.
Well, how do you feel about that, Jay?
A question or a comment?
Well, I'm not sure, Madam Chair. I might think about
it. If you wish to comment, you are welcome to, and if not, it's a comment.
Madam Chair, Representative Ramos, certainly you've hit some of the sensitive issues in the whole process. I don't doubt, as I indicated to Representative Coghill, that there will be lengthy negotiations to sort out how we get unstuck from this tar baby that is up there in Healy. I don't know all the answers. Many of us have talked about it for the 5 years, as even before that. I can remember talking to Representative Kelly about it 15 years ago. So this is not something new. And what we need, though, is a vehicle to sit down and to discuss it rationally, as rational people. It's an asset that needs to be dealt with, and however we deal with it is sort of the wave of the future. And we must, I believe, fix it.
Thank you. And for the record, I'd like to note that I'm giving everyone a generous amount of latitude with your testimony and with your questions, because this is such a critical issue. It's been an emotional issue for many people for a long time. ADA has been mentioned several times. They are online to testify and haven't had an opportunity yet because we're allowing everybody as much time as they have wished, and I don't want to have anyone put words in their mouth or come up with preconceived notions of exactly where they stand until we hear their testimony. So with that, if there are no further questions for Mr. Griffith, we appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next on the list, we have Tuckerman Babcock, and I have you available for questions. Do you wish to testify, or?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think it would be fairer for everyone who has not yet testified, but I would be available. There are some questions that NEA would like to respond to, but.
Okay, we'll go next in line then. Thank you. Mr. Wilkinson with Copper Valley Electric, are you with us?
Yes, ma'am, Madam Chairman. I am here in Glen Allen. My name is Robert Wilkinson, W-I-L-K-I-N-S-O-N, and I am the Chief Executive of Copper Valley Electric Association. We're the rural electric utility that serves the greater Copper River Basin in the city of Valdez. I, too, was on the Energy Policy Task Force, and you heard many speakers comment on the recommendations to transfer the three assets to a unified system operator in a way that recognizes existing contracts. And I think House Bill 163 is a good model to move that discussion forward, although, as you've heard today and from many others, the devil certainly is in the details. So some folks may say out here in Glen Allen we don't have a dog in this fight because we're not part of the rail belt, but my pals at the other utilities, Rep Kelly, Steve Hagenson, Joe Griffith, Jim Posey, and others know I've made my career trying to expand the rail belt system. And in fact, one of my contributions to the Energy Policy Task Force was to coin a new term called the road belt. And when Griffith's guy was making a presentation to the task force, he put a big full map up on the wall and was pointing out the four load centers of the rail belt. And I said, hey, what about that load center that's east of Glen Allen, the fifth load, or east of Anchorage, the fifth load center? And, yeah, we're out here 180 miles away, but we like to think of ourselves as is contributing to the bigger picture. And what I have to offer today is not so much about the rail belt operation, but to talk a little bit about the joint action agency model and the success that the four dam pool had in acquiring the assets of those four hydro projects. As Joe mentioned, the four dam pool indeed is alive and well. The divestiture process to acquire those assets actually began in 1993 after the 18th Alaska legislature passed Senate Bill 106, which, among other things, the state announced that the Alaska Energy Authority was getting out of the business of owning and developing energy assets. Some of you may recall that piece of legislation as the Intertie Bill. It also funded a number of Intertie projects and made some pretty substantial changes to the structure of the Alaska Energy Authority. The Four Dam Pool took that historic legislation as a sign that the state wanted to get out of the business of owning those assets. And that was the unofficial beginning of our process. The effort began for real in 1995 when the Four Dam Pool Board met with ADA officials up at Chena Hot Springs to conduct some preliminary discussions and to set forth the ground rules for moving forward. And along the path to divestiture, there were a number of suitors. There was interest by the legislature in putting the projects out for sale to competitive bid. But ultimately, in May of 2000, the 21st legislature passed House Bill 446, which did a couple of real big things. One, it established the PCE Endowment Fund. And two, it authorized the sale of the four dam pool assets to a joint action agency comprised of the five four dam pool purchasing utilities. We worked very hard over the next couple of years to put that deal together, and I'm happy to tell you that we closed that transaction on January 31, 2002, and our dream of local ownership of those formerly state-owned assets was finally realized. I was reading Rep. Kelly's sponsor statement for this piece of legislation over the last couple of days, and it talks about a number of benefits from transferring ownership of state-owned assets to private utility ownership. And those benefits he lists include the ability for the owner utilities to increase coordination and work more cost-effectively together, the ability to attract lower cost financing, and also the relieving the state of the ownership risks and obligations that Eric Yule touched on a little bit ago regarding the four-dam pool. And I wanted to share three things regarding